and welcome to the Future in Focus radio show starring Michael Vidakin, founder of the forward-thinking research firm, futureinfocus.com. He gives us access to one of the largest bodies of foresight research in the world. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, your co-host, proud to be helping companies understand the future so they can make better decisions today. So sit back and get ready to glimpse tomorrow. Welcome back, talking about Future of Fatherhood with Kevin Osborne and Michael Vidakin, who is the founder of futureinfocus.com. And right now, these two guys are going to talk about stay-at-home dads, and then they're going to segue into the future of grandparenthood, which is awesome. Okay, take it away.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us for part two. Let's talk about stay-at-home dads. And you heard that Kevin here is a stay-at-home dad himself, a pioneer in the field. And a futurist, an amazing futurist at that. And so he's going to share some stories with us today and some information about this really unique market, the stay-at-home dad. So Kevin, is this a big market? Should companies pay attention to them? What's unique about them?
It's a rapidly growing market. I don't know that I would say it's a huge market yet, but it's getting there. I was a stay-at-home dad myself starting about 20-some years ago, and when I did it, it was not as if I was trying to blaze out a trail as a pioneer or anything. It just made sense, and I think that's why many of the people who became stay-at-home dads actually did so. It just made sense to them. I mean, parenting was something I always wanted to do and play an active role in. My wife was working in a hospital at the time, and so it made sense for her to go there, and I was writing at home, so it made more sense for me to try and flex my own schedule around the needs of small children and stay at home with them. I think as time has passed, more and more fathers have decided the same from both a practical standpoint and also that's what they wanted to do. In 2013, there were 176,000 full-time stay-at-home dads, and that's up from 80,000. That's more than double in a decade. But that's really only a small share of the men who consider themselves stay-at-home dads, but it's just a fraction of the total because it doesn't count the 2 million or more dads who work freelance, as I did for a long time, or part-time jobs while serving as their children's primary caregiver. That's about four times as many dads today who act as primary caregivers than did in 1986. Now, the trend of stay-at-home dads has accelerated during and after the Great Recession, but it was actually starting much earlier than that. It was driven by societal shifts and changing gender roles more than the economy. The changes include the fading of the traditional American family, in which the father was the sole breadwinner. That's almost totally defunct nowadays, with just 16% of American households falling into that category of stay-at-home mom and working dad. And it also includes men's increasing prioritization of active fatherhood. Three-quarters of men today consider being a parent really important, compared to just 48%, that's less than half, who felt the same. Feel the same today about having a successful career. And another factor is the growing societal acceptance of men who choose to be active fathers rather than to choose career advancement. I think society may have looked askance at men who would make such a choice years ago, but it's no big deal today. Regardless of what's driving it, more men are choosing to stay at home taking care of their kids today than ever before. And this kind of arrangement is actually working for dads, moms, and couples as a whole. The majority, about 51%, I think, of stay-at-home dads say they're extremely satisfied with the situation, and 61% say that raising their kids is the best job they could ever have.
Well, that sounds like something that you told us earlier, is that's the best job that you've had.
I wouldn't have given it up for the world. I mean, I could have changed course at some point in my life, but I would have given up so much that it just would not have been feasible for me.
Well, I think we can send a special happy Father's Day to all those stay-at-home dads out there. You know, special happy Father's Day to you, Kevin. You know, let me ask also, so we've seen there are a lot of changes in terms of how men have been approaching parenting, their attitudes towards work have been changing, you know, putting more value on parenting and possibly even towards valuing their marriage and their parenting. Are you seeing sort of any unique attitudes of the stay-at-home dads or something different about them than regular dads who are out there working?
Yeah, I don't think that the experience of stay-at-home dads is that much different. Actually, the experience may be different, but the attitudes are pretty much the same. As we've already discussed, most young dads today place a really high value on the time and the care that they devote to their children. Stay-at-home dads do the same. They just have more of an opportunity to do so. They can engage more actively in caregiving responsibilities than other dads who, say, are working outside the home, whether full-time or part-time. The stay-at-home dads are making the most of their opportunities because they're there. The stay-at-home dads, though, are, I think one thing about them is that they're alone. They still, even though it's more accepted by society, they're still in many ways pioneers. They're exploring this new frontier of fatherhood essentially on their own, even more than other new fathers. And as such, they require the kind of support that can be found in both physical and digital communities. And they're actually going about creating these communities. It's definitely worth noting that flexible scheduling in workplaces is increasingly important, not just to moms in the workforce, but to dads too. Men prefer having some voice in determining what hours they work, and they would prefer to have such options as taking a period of paternity leave after the birth of their kids, or using sick days when their kid is sick, or telecommuting. It's overwhelming the number of millennial dads who favor paternity leave. I think it's close to 93%.
I think that makes sense, and companies should really stop and consider how these changes might affect their HR policies in the future, their hiring. Companies that have really restrictive policies might find a lot of men aren't interested in working for them.
Yeah, I think it has HR implications. It also has marketing implications. I think the type of ad that portrays dads as incompetent buffoons is not going to pass muster either with men or with their partners nowadays.
I think it's actually really funny. You mentioned previously that most men actually think they change more diapers now than their wives. You know, and, whether the wives agree with that is a different story. But I think that's exactly what you're talking about here, is that companies have to stop playing to that old stereotype of the dad not even knowing how to change a diaper, whereas, you know, these dads would actually be offended by that.
Yeah, dads are doing this. They're experiencing parenthood in a way previous generations didn't, and they feel that they're good at it, and they don't like being made fun of.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Kevin, are there any sort of interesting stories that you might have of raising your kids, being a stay-at-home dad and kind of futurist, you know, things that you taught them to think about, taught them to look for, any interesting stories that you can share with us?
Nothing springs to mind. I would say that I feel very lucky to have been in the position to do so. I think those of my generation who saw what I was doing, a lot of them were frankly jealous. I mean, they were successful in their own fields, just as I have been successful in mine. But I think most parents older than, say, Gen X are now at a stage of their lives where they regret not having the opportunity to spend more time with their kids. I treasured those experiences.
You actually wrote a report about American parents changing attitudes as well, looking at the new sort of new American grandparents as a market. And one of the things in that report was that some of those men who weren't as involved in parenthood when they were younger and having their own children are sort of having a second lease on life with their grandchildren. And it sounds like they're actually trying to sort of relive those days by being an active grandparent.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of the older generation of men are trying to make up for time they lost when they were younger. They, you know, in the 1980, say, men were expected to be the sole breadwinners still, even after, you know, the women's liberation movement had started and women were becoming more active in gaining educational achievements and in the workplace. But men were still expected to work. And I think a lot of them still regret missing out. And so as a result, those who are becoming grandparents today are devoting more and more time and energy to their grandchildren. They're more active and more involved than their own parents were. Pew found that more grandfathers than grandmothers, and this is surprising, say that they've helped with childcare. 57% of grandparents today say they've done that, and only 47% of grandmothers. So grandparents are really very active in their grandchildren's lives. 63% of grandparents today say they play sports or exercise or go on outings with their grandchildren, and I think almost a majority, about 43%, say that it's part of their job to spoil their grandchildren by buying them too much. In many of the shared experiences with and their gifts for their grandchildren, I think today's grandparents are emphasizing educational value. Multi-generational travel, for example, is surging. And that all fits well with the boomer consumer value of authenticity, which is prompting many grandparents to seek out educational travel and offer genuine experiences that they share with their grandkids. And one major difference I see with today's grandparents from earlier generations is that many of the grandfathers today simply have more money than their own parents did when they were grandparents.
That's something businesses should pay attention to, just that fact alone.
Absolutely. The households today headed by 55 to 64-year-olds, which they're largely boomers and many of them are grandparents, have the highest net worth of any demographic group in the country. That's an average of over $250,000 in net worth. And they own half the nation's personal financial assets. Another factor is that most of them now own their homes, and very few of them carry a mortgage, so that they have the money, and more than that, they're willing to spend it. Spending by those 55 and older increased faster than that of any other group in the first decade of the century, and they seem to enjoy giving money or spending money on their grandkids. And they want to do it now when they can really use it rather than save it as a legacy for the future. I think spending on by grandparents on grandkids has jumped about 7.5% every year in the first decade of the century. An overwhelming majority, 96% of U.S. grandparents, spend money on their grandchildren, and 62% of them say they've provided financial assistance for their grandkids.
Wow, so the majority of U.S. grandparents are spending money on their grandchildren. They're providing financial assistance. Sounds like I need to find a way to create a business to market to grandparents.
Well, they've got the money and they want to spend it, so yeah.
And the digital divide seems to be disappearing too, right? More grandparents being online and interacting with their grandchildren and children online.
Absolutely, and I think part of that is that their grandparents themselves are getting younger. I mean, in one sense, they're getting older because people are living for longer. But today's grandparents, there are boomers who are grandparents, and there are even Gen X people who are becoming grandparents. So that they're getting younger, they're more familiar with the digital world, and granted they're not as digitally savvy as their children and grandchildren who find this stuff second nature, but four or five boomers today are online, which means that probably even a higher percentage of grandparents are online. Still, it's not totally instinctive for boomers, the whole digital realm. I think it's something less than half of grandparents communicate with their grandkids through Skype or texting or email or social media. But they're getting there. They're catching up. And new younger grandparents are already more versed in technology than the grandparents that they're joining, the older boomers.
Yeah, that makes sense. My grandma has an iPad, but my mom really knows how to use it. You know, I see the divide between the two of them. You know, while my grandma can look at images and do some basic things, my mom is into all of the different types of apps, and actually does use Skype with her grandchildren and all sorts of ways to take notes and keep in touch.
Well, older people today are so much more able and so much more alert that if they want something, they will still go out and get it. I mean, if my 92-year-old mother could learn how to Skype with her grandkids, anybody can do it.
Absolutely, and that's actually a good thing to note for any of those companies that are developing apps out there to actually have in mind a wide variety of audiences that they're designing for. So in a lot of cases, simpler the better. Make it easy to get in and do whatever it is the app is supposed to do.
Absolutely. One of the big advantages of the digital age is the ability to connect older people who often grew up, you know, in previous generations isolated, that ability to connect them with people who are, you know, across the country, around the world, and the people that they love, they can still communicate with on a regular basis. And the easier companies can make that for old and young alike, the better it'll be.
And I think we can tie it back to experiences as well. Really anything that can really create a strong experience for grandparents, for parents, and for children to bring them all together, that's going to be a really strong selling point.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, this has been fascinating, and it's about all the time we have, but I think we got two really good sessions of interviews out there for our listeners to learn more about the future of fatherhood. Thank you, Kevin Osborne, author of many books about parenting, the father of four, and maybe one of the first stay-at-home dads, or at least the first generation of them. So we really appreciate your time, Kevin.
Hey, thank you so much, Hope. I enjoyed being here.
And thank you, Michael Vidiken, whose company futureinfocus.com is chock full of briefs. He has more than 1,400 briefs, and the subscription is just amazingly affordable for you, for any researcher, small business, etc., to go and dive in. If you want to contact Michael, you can reach him at 202-669-8055 or shoot him an email at michael@futureinfocus.com. You are listening to the Future in Focus radio show. Thank you so much for your time. We will talk to you soon.